take a look for himself. It appeared at first glance to be a mound of rags, lying close to the entrance of an apparently abandoned cottage. Each one they had passed so far in their journey had been derelict, and neither man had dared dismount to look beyond the wind-beaten, clattering open doors for fear of what they would find within.
"You keep back, my lord," shouted Shevlin. "I will take a look. It'll be nowt but rags and pots, which a tenant found too heavy to carry when leaving, I'm guessing. Poor beggar. Probably hoped it would be safe under the hedge until he came back for it."
The sky darkened and Owen saw that dark clouds had moved swiftly inland from the Atlantic. His horse, unhappy that Shevlin's had gone on ahead without him, spooked and skittered about, its shoes scraping on the rough road, sending up clouds of dust.
"Steady, Ahi! Steady!" shouted Owen.
His face gleamed with moisture from the damp air and the effort of controlling the spirited grey gelding. His hat became dislodged in the struggle to remain in the saddle and now lay in the middle of the road. At last Ahi reluctantly obeyed his master and stood four square, his eyes bulging with anxiety and blowing white clouds of steam as he snorted his unwillingness to stand still.
"Good boy.
Steady," whispered Owen, patting Ahi's neck, fearing that at any second he would rear up. In the battle between man and horse, Owen was only just winning. Owen saw that the foreboding clouds had settled over a gap in the hills and heavy, black, vertical rain was pouring down onto the village of Mulrani, covering the village in a shadowy veil. Owen shivered as a cool breeze caught between the hills suddenly whipped down the road.
"Jesus,"
he whispered, shortening his reins.
"What is it, Shevlin?"
He was afraid to shout too loud, in case he set the horse off again. But a feeling of wanting to be away had overtaken the need to calm a spooked horse. He didn't like this road and he trusted his horse. If Ahi was nervous, there would be good reason. Shevlin was standing still and the dogs, who had run out with them that morning, were investigating the bundle half concealed by the hedge. They began to circle around, barking madly, almost in a frenzy. The cottage door stood ajar and an air of decay loitered close to the outer walls. No welcoming plume of smoke rose from the central chimneys, as it would normally have done on such a miserable day.
"Stay back, my lord,"
Shevlin shouted over his shoulder, as he kicked on his own horse into a trot.
"We should ride on. The cottage is abandoned. It would only be vermin infested. Don't come near. Away now."
Shevlin was newly arrived at Ballyford. Owen's previous land agent had left for America as quickly as the famine and typhus had arrived in Mayo. They were off to Cove faster than the time it took for news of their desertion to reach the Fitzdeans' townhouse in London. There was not a land agent in all of England who would set foot in Ireland during these days of disease and hunger. The second potato crop had failed, and there was devastation everywhere. The air was filled with the overpowering stench of decaying vegetation, and the streets were filled with people travelling among the dead, with no place to go. They carried meagre belongings, tied with string, and rags on stooped backs, desperate to reach somewhere they could offer work in exchange for food. At Ballyford, they heard that soldiers on horseback, armed with bayonets, were heading towards Mayo in an attempt to maintain order. Owen had estates in Lancashire, Scotland, and Ireland. Moreover, as a member of the British Parliament, he had been requested to compile a report on the effect of the famine upon the peasants. It was felt that a report from one of the landed gentry who had farming interests in the worst-hit areas would be more readily believed by Parliament than the findings of the scientific committee. Before the famine began, Owen had left his land and his tenants in Ireland in good shape. He resented having to leave his family in London to return to his estate alone. But Owen was a man of principle, and if the Prime Minister desired his considered opinion, it was his duty to ensure it was provided in full. Since news of the first crop failure had arrived in London, he had dedicated his time to the needs of the country where he felt most at home. He argued with his fellow landowners for the repeal of the Corn Laws and for the British government to ban imports from Ireland so that the country could become self-sufficient. He'd even made his